We are live. It is March 30th, 2024. Officially the Dingus Day Party here at Eastern Market Brewing. That's right. It is Ken Beck, episode 43 of the Michigan Beer Series. With me is my co-host live at the brewery, Wendy. Wendy, how you doing?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm well. What are you drinking over there?
I am drinking the Dingus Day Lager.
Perfect. That's actually what I've got, too. And I've got a nice little hard seltzer that they got over here at Eastern Market Brewing, which we're definitely going to be touching on in a little bit. But we do have two guests in our studio, makeshift studio, inside the barrel room here at Eastern Market Brewing. To my left, why don't you introduce yourself, tell us who you are and what you do here.
Hello, I'm Adam. I am the head brewer for technically Elephant & Co., but Eastern Market Brewing Co. Been with the company almost 3 years now. Happy to be here.
Awesome. And right in front of me to my right, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do here?
Hey, y'all. I'm Tony. I do the social media marketing for all the brands under Elephant & Company. And so that includes Ferndale Project, Eastern Market Brewing Company, and our vegan donuts, Duke Donuts.
Well, let's kind of catch us up, because the last time we had Eastern Market in our studio, it was a COVID show. We were on Zoom. We had different people on the show, so we're going to get a decent opportunity to learn a little bit more about how the business has expanded since, for the last two and a half years. Let's first start off, what is Elephant & Co.? What is the genesis of Elephant & Co.? And along with Eastern Market, Ferndale Project, and Duke Donuts, what is the other pieces of that puzzle for the business?
It all started with Eastern Market Brewing Company, obviously. And then, I don't know if everybody knows the backstory, but we acquired a place in Ferndale right around COVID time. When was that? Like right
February
before COVID?
2020, pretty much.
So like a month before everything happened. And obviously dealt with like a lot of change with that building, and then Duke Donuts became another asset we acquired in that whole process. And just from all that, Dane always wanted to make like an umbrella company, or like an umbrella to like kind of house all these different brands we have. So that's kind of where Elephant & Company came from. And pretty soon there'll be two Elephant & Company locations.
Now, you guys have a location in Royal Oak as well, correct?
Yep.
It's not a brewery, but what is it?
So it is a brewery. That's our main production facility. We've got a 30-barrel system up there. That tap room has been open almost a year now, maybe a half year. Last October, we fully opened. With always the idea of pizza and beer. That's like the Elephant & Co. brand. And recently, we've finally got our approval to make pizzas out of that place. It has a kitchen, so you can enjoy pizza in the tap rooms, as well as soon to be home delivery. We've been testing home delivery out of our Midtown location, but that tap room is not open yet. And both those tap rooms are self-serve, so you pour your own beers.
That's with the key fob technology, correct?
Yep. Pretty new kind of technology. I mean, it wasn't approved in Michigan until last year, so it's kind of new for everyone. But now all these self-serve tap rooms are popping up, and we're just one of the few breweries that actually make their own beer and then serve it. But those are always good locations to try, like, our wide array of brands as well. So it's kind of fun to have that option as a customer, I think.
But the Royal Oak location is where like all the elephant juice gets made, 313.
Correct. That's our
all
flagship.
The big brands. Yeah. So
where you're canning and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Anymore, the Eastern Market tap room has kind of just become more of a tap room. We did the Dingus Day Lager here, but all the large scale stuff happens in Royal Oak now.
Now, there's rumors, and when I mean rumors, I overheard people talking about maybe doing open fermentation here at Eastern Market Brewing. Is that in...
That is the goal.
The goal, okay.
To be determined when that will happen. Ideally, we want to open that Midtown location and start using that system and actually brewing beers out of there.
How big is the system in the Midtown location?
So that's a 5-barrel system, so it's the same size as down here. But it's a lot fancier and way more high-tech. So we can do more fun stuff, more collab beers. The stuff that we kind of do down here, just over there, and then we'll turn this into, a sour house.
Before I pass it off to Wendy, yeah. You said high tech. So for me, I'm a home brewer at best.
Sure.
And what does the technology do? How does it help you? What does it change? Like, what are these processes that you get to do at the Midtown location in Detroit versus what you won't be able to do here in Eastern Market?
Sure. And you guys saw the system in action. It's pretty manual, I think we might have had a couple of hiccups in the beginning, like our boiler kind of goes on the fritz sometimes here. But a lot more automation at the Midtown location. So everything's, controlled from a computer screen. Everything is, Bluetooth enabled. You can control your pumps from your phone. So I always joke that you can have, when can brewers brew from home, work from home culture. And I believe that space you actually could. You can control valves, you can send water into tanks, you can clean a tank all automatically without touching a single thing but your smartphone.
With that kind of capability, could you open it up to kind of what Saugatuck Brewing does, where they have team building exercises where companies come in and brew their own beer and kind of have their own experience there? Is that something that's possible there, or is it maybe even way too high tech to where you need that?
No, totally. It's just a different style of brewing. Not style, but different, there's less feel of it and more technicality, I guess, or you get very rigidness, so it can be, it's the most primo pilot system you could find. So you can maintain consistency through that. Ideally, we wanted this space to, it has turned into kind of our collab space, so where we bring in brands and other companies to brew their own beers or beers for them. And so we'll use that as that space. And so I think, better brews out of that system, just more consistency, and it'll be fun when we get the license. Yeah.
So, speaking of collabs, you brought us in to help brew a beer.
Sure.
What made you guys decide to do a Dingus Day celebration?
I think that kind of started with just the popularity of the Punschki party and the Punschki beers. And obviously, there's a lot of Polish roots in Detroit. So, it just kind of stemmed from, after this year's Punschki party, it was, one of the best days we've had in general sales-wise. We were what else can we, how else can we, use this to our advantage? And then our VP, Pauline, came up to me and she's like, "Have you ever heard of Dingus Day?" And I'm like, "Absolutely not." And I'm pretty Polish. And it's a weird celebration. It's typically the day after Easter's over, so Fat Tuesday, it's the opposite of that. When once Lent's over, you kind of do another celebration that way.
Wet Monday.
Yeah. There's that nice whole aspect with the pussy willows and dumping water on people. I don't really understand that part, but
I'm still trying to figure it out myself.
Yeah.
Well, celebration was spring. It was all meant to be a almost a prayer to the gods, because it's supposed to be from the March equinox for a good harvest for the spring.
Okay, so you're
So you know how people, this is definitely very, not subtle, but hey, we're going to do all this stuff because in Poland, they couldn't, I believe they couldn't get palm leaves for Palm Sunday, so they blessed pussy willows to kind of take the place.
That was the first plant that bloomed in the spring. That's why they used it.
Yeah.
Ah. Okay. Yeah. It makes sense. So we just kind of tapped into that. And actually in Buffalo, Chicago, Cleveland, it's a very big celebration now. So we have a lot of Polish heritage here in Detroit, and we just decided to, why not throw one more party, jam one more in there.
So we brewed the Dingus Day Lager. Why don't you tell us about the beer?
Pretty, basic light lager. to be honest, I don't know what a Polish lager means. Like, what makes a Polish lager a Polish lager, I guess? But we used a little bit of Vienna in the mash, so you get that, like, sweetness out of it. A little bit of just noble hops in here. I think 2 pounds, so for 5 barrels, so not a ton. But this one was fun because we spunded it, so we kept all that natural CO2 in the beer, and it, to be honest, I think it kind of leans a little flat, but in a good way. but I think it's good. It's a good, this may or may not be the last beer that we brew out of here that's not a sour beer, so that's a little exciting that it turned out well. Yeah, I think people like it. It's just light, crisp.
I like to blame my expert hop pouring skills
for
that.
Yeah, you did a great job.
We did have a lot of fun coming in. I appreciate you guys opening the doors to us to come in, help brew the beer. We use the term help very loosely, Wendy and I.
Very.
We were there. I feel like we might have drank more beer than we did the actual brewing process. But, you know, that's, I've been told that's what you do when you brew.
Yeah,
when
that's how those go.
When you're the collaborator.
You stuck around a lot longer than most people do, so.
I feel if we're going to slap our name on something, we want to make sure that it is, you know, we do our part, for sure. This is the 4th official Better on Draft beer. This is the first lager that we've done.
Cool.
We've done 2 alt beers because everybody knows on the show that I love my alt beers. So we did an alt beer at North Center Brewing, RIP. We also did a peanut butter pale ale for opening day. This would have been 2018, I believe. We got to do it with Brad Etheridge over at Atwater in the Park.
Sweet.
So very, very great beer. We got a lot of little flack here, and I kind of want to bring this to the social media guy here in a second, but I'll make sure to lead in the question very long. Do you run into a lot of issues? Because you're reading the comments, you're reading the posts, the untaps, the responses. When you make a beer that is kind of like another beer, meaning, so our peanut butter pale was kind of like peanuts and cracker jacks from Mitten Brewing.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And apparently you can't make a peanut butter beer or a peanut beer if somebody else has already made a peanut beer. But do you see that when someone tries to bring in like a specific flavor profile and they're like, oh my gosh, somebody else did it?
So, yeah, I mean, speaking of peanut butter, we just released peanut butter and jelly porter, right?
Yep.
PB&Jaylee.
Yeah.
Which Elk no longer exists.
So, we just released that. I did get some, you know, you do see some responses about, you know, this brewery has done it maybe or, you know, something like that. But people are usually willing to try our stuff, which is, you know, which is a great thing about all of our followers and our members. Like, everybody gives us a shot. So, I mean, in the world of food and drink, beverage in general, I mean, there's going to be crossover. So, I don't know. There's only a finite amount of original ideas out there. So, like, what are you going to do? You know, it's more about just doing it right than, like, kind of being different sometimes, I think.
It's funny that you bring that up, too, because, like, now we've been around, you know, 5 years. We have this bank of recipes, but now we're getting into the fact that, like, we've already, you know, I don't know. What new stuff can we do now, you know? Like,
I feel like what's old is becoming new again. I feel like I'm seeing
it's all
a
cyclical,
lot of,
yeah.
Well, you know, we always talk about each year is going to be the year of the lager, and it never really gets there. It never gets there to the love of, like, when black IPAs exploded.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if we got that much, like, you know, a New England IPA, that's a whole other story. But black IPAs, brutes for a while,
sure.
Sours definitely, especially in this area because we have Nucleate. So, of course, a lot of sour lovers here in Michigan. Jolly Pumpkin, you know, being the standard bearer for a lot of sour programs. Have you guys made sours here yet? Or
so we'll do kettle sours. We've never done wild sours.
What's the difference?
Kettle sour is a, we're introducing lactobacillus into the kettle and then kind of letting it sour in that kettle for a couple days. So usually, typically, we brew them on a Friday, let it sour for the weekend. And lactobacillus is, like, not a wild sour, so you can kill it off by boiling it. It's pretty maintainable. It's cheap. It comes in like dry packets like yeast. Whereas a wild sour will infect your entire brewery and space and all your equipment, all your hosing. Kind of like a sourdough starter where that bacteria is on those baker's hands. It's on the tables. It's everywhere. And so once you introduce that bacteria into a sour house, then it doesn't really go away. So that's the fear. Like, once you infect a brewery, then it's always infected. But, if we can use it to make beer, then that's a good thing. But I wanted to get back to on the point you were bringing up, stuff that we've done before kind of thing. And I think we are in like a special situation now where we're starting to branch out. You know, like Tony said, it was cyclical. You're pulling on old trends, but now I find that we're diversifying our liquids. We're putting out hard seltzers, we're putting out NA products. So either, you know, these things that are kind of booming in the market, but it's also just fun to play around with new, you know, NA products that people haven't done, and new seltzer ideas that people haven't done. And it's kind of fun to try to mimic a macro brewery without like throwing a bunch of fruit, like you said, into a seltzer and calling it a seltzer kind of thing. And it's really like drinking a smoothie. But
we talked about it before the show started, and yeah. When you run into seltzers, and then you run into like an Untitled Art seltzer,
sure,
or you run into Smooch,
holds their own place, yeah,
or
exactly.
You run into like that's
what you think of when you think of craft seltzer. Sometimes, I feel like most people,
yeah,
a lot of times you don't see like, you know, something that looks like a White Claw, you know.
Well, the mass produced craft seltzers yeah. is basically like Wild Basin. Which I think it's either Canarchy. I think it's Canarchy. But I know Canarchy or what Monster Brewing, I think, is the official new name for them now, because I think they just changed over to Monster after Monster purchased them a few years ago. I love going and seeing a brewery that has a wide selection. The problem is that I personally, like Wendy, I'm pretty sure you love like those Belgian Strongs, those doubles, triples, quads. Whereas for me, I'm looking for English Milds, Alts, ESBs. And your diversification is NA and seltzer.
Sure.
But I am starting to see a lot more of those styles, the ones that Wendy and I like, are starting to pop up at breweries a lot more. And within Mothfire, which is a massive brewery, they're known for their IPAs, they're known for their barrel-aged beers. But when I went there and tried their alt beer, the guy was telling me it was their number 3 seltzer, and I thought he was full of shit. Mm. And then I went back a week later, and they were sold out.
Yeah.
And it was that good that I went back a week later to grab it. But how do you manage brewing what you want to brew
yeah.
versus brewing what everybody wants to drink?
Sure. There's a fine line, for sure. I guess that was my point, too. Like, it's interesting to see craft breweries not brewing beer anymore. Like, you are brewing beer, but you're also brewing other non-beer stuff. And so, like, I think half the stuff we make is, you know, not classic beer. It's an NA product. It's hop water. It's seltzer. Cold brew, even. So how do we manage that? I mean, we're definitely, at least under the Eastern Market brand, we're definitely more traditional, trying to kind of appease people, whereas Ferndale Project, we would take more risks and
yeah, it's
be
nice
a little
having
more experimental
kind
with
of two
that.
Different brands where you can do one, stay a more traditional route, and Ferndale Project was always meant to be, like, more experimental,
totally,
less,
yeah.
like, mass-produced kind of beers.
And we all, you know, we're all on the same brew team, so it's not... The brands are separate, but the brewers are crisscross all the time, so we work with Ferndale all the time as well.
Do you think that kind of sets you on the same level where, like, Nubco is right now with Jolly Pumpkin and then Blue Tractor and North Peak and Grizzly Peak? Like, they have all these different yeah. brands, and you'll see all of them together when you go to them, because most of them are brew pubs. So mm-hmm. you'll see North Peak at Jolly Pumpkin. You'll see North Peak at Blue Tractor. Is that... Was that the initial plan with Elephant & Co., is kind of like looking at what they did there, or...
I think it definitely helped having this, like, overarching company. Yeah, I mean, you talk about brand identities. It's, like, hard to nail down what Eastern Market, I guess, is. Same with Ferndale, other than calling it an experimental brewery, but... I don't know, to get on your question, how do we feel like we're... Like, what was your question?
I don't know. I've asked, like, four questions in the middle of these questions. I guess the initial question was, how do you balance brewing what you want to brew versus what everybody else wants to drink? And I think you kind of answered it where you are blessed with multiple identities because of the different breweries that you have, where you could say, hey, this is an Eastern Market beer, this is a Ferndale Project beer.
Definitely.
And people kind of understand the differences.
Yeah, and like I said, too, with, you know... Not necessarily shared brew teams, but we all work together. We're not separated. So, you know, say someone's more inclined to make a sour, then, hey, he'll make the sour today. You know, someone has an idea for seltzer that, you know, I don't really drink NA products, but someone on the brew team maybe has an idea. So we'll kind of share that. And I don't know. It's a good... It feels more collaborative now that we have so many products that we can kind of pull ideas from anyone, and kind of feels lawless sometimes, where, you know, we can kind of make up our own rules and kind of do what we want, but obviously we're taking notes from, you know, what's done well in the past, and I wouldn't say we're chasing trends. The seltzer thing is probably the biggest, most, like, prominent NA. It's like chasing a trend or trying to appease to the consumer.
The trend for seltzers was back in 2019.
Like, you're craft seltzers, I should say, yeah.
You're not necessarily chasing it as much as joining it, but the NA...
Yeah, for sure.
The NA part itself, I mean, that's not necessarily a trend as much as the next generation of drinkers. Gen Z, your Gen Alpha, don't want booze.
No.
They want flavor, but they don't want booze.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to start seeing a lot more of these craft NAs where you can get beer, like, without the booze. And me personally, like, I feel like this is where Casamara Club is going to really be on top of the game, because I think a lot of people are going to look over at what Jason Laval is doing over there and be like, wow, look at all these different flavors we can have without the hangover, without the buzz. Like... And also the price point. Like, everybody didn't want a, you know, Bud Zero because it costs the exact same as a Bud.
Right.
Like, that was the hard point. But now you've got a NA Amber from Brooklyn, like their Hoppy Amber. Or you have all these other NAs where the flavor just tastes like beer.
Yeah.
So you're getting the
worth
beer.
Worth paying that price.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, Guinness Zero. Have you had Guinness Zero?
Great.
Oh, my God.
Right.
The first one I had, I'm like, this is ridiculously good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same price as Guinness.
Yeah.
But if I don't want to drink, but I want to have something flavorful, like, I don't want something super sugary, like a Coca-Cola or something like that. And I really, you know, I'm trying my best not to drink diet sodas anymore. So what's left is, you know, something that's going to give me a little bit more flavor.
Sure.
I've been trying to pass it off to Wendy for the last, like, 10 minutes.
I know, but I was listening to your... poetic talk about the NAs that you really like. So I think, though, that kind of just goes to the fact that the whole beer industry has changed so much in the last few years.
Oh, yeah.
When I first started drinking beer, when you went to a brewery, one, you didn't get food. That was non-existent. And it was, you know, five or six different beers. That was what you got. And now there's so much different variety everywhere you go, and there's different types of food, and people want to go to the brewery almost like they want to go out to dinner at a fancy restaurant. Like, they want to have a bunch of different things available, so it's kind of necessary to have that diversity with the NAs and the seltzers and have things for people to drink that don't drink beer.
Totally, yeah. And maybe that's, you know, half the reason, because we're finding that someone comes up to the bar, hey, what do you have that's not beer? It's like, well, you came to a brewery. but that question comes up so much more nowadays than it did even 2 years ago. So,
at least it's not, what do you have that tastes like Bud Light?
Yeah, yeah, a little less than that. Yeah.
That used to be a really big question.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm a Bud Light drinker, I would give this to a Bud Light drinker, and I think they love it. Like,
yeah.
It's that right amount of sweetness. It doesn't have, like, a sour beer taste like someone who never drank a lager before. Like,
sure.
It's very, very, it's very good. Like, I think we did a very good job, guys.
I'd give this to a High Life drinker, not necessarily a Bud Light drinker.
I don't know. Bud Light's my first, like, the macro I go to. I'm a Miller Lite drinker myself. No shame. Bingo Square, I went back full keto, and when I go bowling every Thursday night, I have a 20-ounce Miller Lite and then 3 ounces of Woodford Reserve.
Nice.
Like, that's my, instead of, I used to do a pitcher of Miller. I'm like, pitcher and then a pint.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, you know, I can now count my carbs and looking at my net carbs, like, oh my God, what it is. All right, 20 ounces of Miller Lite and then whiskey.
Got to switch to Michelob Ultra now.
Miller Lite has like 0.1 more carbs than Michelob Ultra.
Oh, yeah, that's their stick. Yeah.
That was, there was a whole thing. I remember when Matt Bush came onto the show one of the very first times, and that was the first thing he told us, was like how he would sell so much Miller Lite versus Mick Ultra was literally just by telling people, hey, these are the little differences. And then you start seeing it in the commercials the flashing sign, only one more carb, only one more calorie or whatever it is. I want to get into social media a little bit. We've had amazing social media people on the show that have given us a lot of information. How do you manage trekking through the alcohol and social media rules within like TikTok and Facebook and all those things? Because you can't... There's rules, there's loose rules, but you still have to follow certain things. How do you balance that?
I don't know. I try to follow. Like, I try not to do... As long as you're not doing anything egregious, like, stay away from, like, chugging, like, on the camera and everything. But, like, I feel like we are kind of just enough under the radar to where we can get away with a little bit more. Like, Bud Lights and your big domestics, like, they have obviously so many more eyes and scrutiny under them, which is, like, a big problem. But we can kind of, like... get away with a little bit more, even more than like a shorts or something, just because our audience is like pretty local. Obviously we want to get to the point where we're huge, and I would be having to be a lot more strict on myself with what I can post, but TikTok is a weird thing because it's such a young audience that it doesn't resonate with like breweries at all. I've tried like Instagram, Facebook. It's a lot easier to grow your audience because that is your audience. TikTok has been like a struggle to even like. I think they are a lot more strict on what gets continually like reposted, because you could put something up and you're not necessarily gonna get reprimanded, but it'll get kind of shuffled beneath. You know, it won't get put up and on everybody's page like that. And TikTok is just it's a Gen Z app, and even though I think they're growing up, it just doesn't resonate with like breweries at all. It's kind of weird.
I see a lot of breweries.
Yeah.
They do like the skits and dances.
Yeah.
You never really know with TikTok what is actually going to take off and what's not. Because there's no, like, specific time that you can post. Like, I've tried all that different...
Yeah, you're almost better off, like, getting away from the alcohol part of it and just trying to, like, lean into the bartenders and, like, the community aspect of it rather than the product itself.
I finally just hit 1,000 people and I'm 1,000 followers, and I'm like super excited. It's taken me like 2 years because it's hard to figure out all that, the way to get people to pay attention.
Yeah, if you don't get one of those blow up videos, like if you are unaware, so one of the owners of Presidential, Kaylee, she had a random thing with her and her dog that went viral. and like overnight, and I'm looking at this and I'm like, I recognize something. Something's in this TikTok I'm recognizing. It had to have been the dog because obviously I'm friends with her on Facebook, and I don't think anything of it. I don't look at the username or anything like that, and I go through, and then like the next day I see her post and she sees like this giant growth, and I'm like, that's kind of what to kick off your social media, you need that one thing, that one spark that gets shared a little too much. Or
did you guys see the video of that guy opening the tank?
Oh yeah, that gets reposted.
I was trying to convince Dane to just like have us, you know, accidentally do that.
I mean, that like, just got wasted. Yeah. And
they got a lot of exposure, though. So.
Oh, yes. Sure. But here's the thing, though, is that they got a lot of exposure. What's the name of the brewery?
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to find that. Yeah, I want to know who fucked up.
So we all know about that, but how do you capitalize on
it? Yeah, that's what they should have done. They should have used it to their advantage.
I mean, at that point, you're almost better off making a beer with that name. Yeah. Like, almost like Roke still exists, so you can't do blow your face out or blow your face off or whatever their double IPA is. But I mean, you could figure something like, you know.
We need to create some type of tragedy.
I don't know if that's how you make it famous on social media.
So I want to talk about naming beers, because I was campaigning pretty hard to name this beer Wet Monday.
Yeah, you can call it that.
we ended up with Dingus Day Lager. So how do you guys decide what you name your beers?
Yeah, that comes down mostly to our sales team. You know, we have beer strategy meetings every week. But yeah, it's mostly our sales team thinking of what people would like to see on the shelves. Something that kind of catches someone's eye. Something like this beer, it's pretty obvious that it's Dingus Day, and maybe people don't know what Dingus Day is, so I think we'd rather call it that. Whereas like Wet Monday, people are like, well, I don't know what that is either, but I don't know. You put wet in a name.
Usually there's a little more meaning to it for the Eastern Market beers. Like, they're kind of seasonal IPAs. Elephant Juice has always been Elephant Juice. But with Ferndale, we have so many releases that it's kind of just like, yeah, we have a beer strategy meeting. We just, like, throw 19 things on a whiteboard and just kind of, like, circle two of them and call it that. Like,
there's usually some sort of meaning, yeah, or, like, double entendre about what it is. But yeah, most Eastern Market brands now are either set in stone or are part of a series, weather series or our
We are flannel. In the process of rebranding our Imperial Sours.
That
going
is
for
true,
like a
yes.
higher ABV. And that's like an interesting one because we're trying to like kind of sell it as not a beer. Like a craft cocktail, even though it is just an Imperial Sour, but like we're trying to like kind of sell it as something else, just because we are in that like era of like canned craft cocktails, so we're trying to like kind of make one that's a beer but a sour.
I think you've had a couple that are very similar to craft cocktails that are very
so we're
that
kind
have
of
been
sticking
very
with
successful.
That. We called it like the Margarita Ghosts and all Cranberry Cosmo we just came out with, and they're really good. But we're just calling them sours. Now we're gonna try to. They're gonna be like 10%, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna lean into like calling it like 20 proof.
Okay.
As to try to like.
And we'll can those in sweet cans as well, so it'll be more. Yeah, I don't know. I think of, like, those Bacardi and Coke cans, you know, like
right.
the RTGs. But, yeah, so I think we found a lot more success in the cocktail-inspired sours that we found than, you know, heavily fruited sours or just our Goza series in general is not as popular as it once was. So we're kind of trying to shift that into either beefing it up and then, throwing a canned cocktail kind of it.
So I do have a couple questions about kind of what's next. One, we have a lot of people, which I've just recently learned, that follow us from out of state. So where can you get beer from Elephant & Co. out of state? Can you do that yet?
There.
Yeah, you can't really get it because we self-distribute.
Okay.
And I don't know the laws exactly, but we're basically not allowed to ship our beer out of Michigan.
Okay.
So
we do work with some international brands, like why is it blanking?
You can go to China. Yeah.
It's not Trudeau.
What's the name of that?
It's a subscription
online subscription
kind of thing,
where you buy the beer. Tavor,
yes. And we've
that we can't get here.
Sent a couple things to China, even randomly, just these small markets that want to buy our beer. So you could find us there, surprisingly, but
people would need to like reach out to us and buy like a pallet of beer and come get it.
Correct. Yeah.
Take it out of the state, but because we're doing like our own distributing, we're not allowed to go past Michigan.
Is that a Michigan law?
It's a Michigan law.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense then, because Michigan laws kind of suck for distributing.
Yeah, it's pretty lame. I get a lot of people that actually do ask me. I mean, there's people out in Washington, and I'm always like, well, I can send you like a 4-pack or something in the mail, but like, we can't like actually distribute out of state. It's
yeah, I kind of want to be like, Gretchen, you talk about beer in Michigan all the time. Help us get our product out there. Mm-hmm. Like, it drives me insane.
The large issue is with the larger breweries where they don't want that increased competition. So Eastern Market was on the forefront of the entire production increase. So you guys were able to increase internal distribution, increase personal distribution, as well as eliminating internal numbers. So when you brew something and sell something here, it doesn't count towards your distribution number. So that was massive, but these big breweries don't want the competition. And that's the same also with a lot of bars, taverns, restaurants and stuff, because if I can go and I can go get now, I can order the brewery, I can be there in their subscription, and I can get the brewery beer here in Michigan, that eliminates me going to, say, former sponsor Three Next Scoreboard over in Allen Park. So it hurts a lot of these businesses, but it obviously will take a lot of money away from these businesses. But in the same token, I don't think they understand that if I got a beer and I ordered it and it came for me from Tavor or whatever, and now I know I can get it at Hopcat, big pour houses, Hopcat, Three Nicks, all these places, or I can go to Zatuna Liquor and I can buy it off the shelf at Zatuna Liquor. Maybe not their really special macadamia nut barrel aged, twice barrel aged rosé, tequila, whatever beer. I can go to Zatuna and go get, Black Tuesday, because they're going to have it on the shelf. Like, these are the things that I don't think a lot of these places have the foresight to look for, because they're going to lose that right away dollar. And for us, like, we've always talked about wanting to expand the ability to get more beer in Michigan, be able to buy more beer, be able to ship beer. Like, just as much as we can't get the beer, we, as the consumer, you guys can't ship your beer.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So now you lose on all of that. You lose on the fact that somebody has to go up to, Detroit from Toledo to go get your beer. They can't go get it in Toledo, or they can't order it to get shipped here, because a lot of these people will pay for that shipping.
Yeah.
Oh, I love your beer. I'm only in Seattle once a year. Now I want, red envelope, and I can't order it because I can't get it shipped here. So
it's funny that you say that, because I think now, too, especially craft beer is so saturated that, and I've seen so many breweries that are, refuse to use a distributor, which is totally fine. But it almost like forces you to, you have to go to the tap room to buy the beer. It like almost makes it more of a special thing, kind of sentimental, value to that product versus, can I buy it online and have it shipped to my door kind of thing. I don't know if that's the intention, but, that's kind of how I think of it.
Well,
I like to make that pilgrimage, sometimes.
But I don't think you're not going to not make that pilgrimage. I think you're still going to go there because you're going to want to go. Like,
depends on your idea of growth, too. Like, if you want to grow to a size where everyone in the nation can drink your stuff,
But my big comparison is, like, say you love White Labs. Like, you want to try something. Or maybe you're a brewer and you want to try how they made this yeast into that beer.
Yeah.
Well, do I have to go all the way to fucking Chicago to Omega Yeast or White Labs in Asheville? Or can I order that beer so I can try it and see that that yeast profile is good? And
sure.
I think the positives outweigh the negatives, but the government spending or government donations, we'll say, from bars, restaurants, taverns, these places just really hinder your ability to grow. And with how our government works, like when COVID hit, I think, like, between, you know, and this isn't like a partisan issue, like every, like we had that young lady on from Water Levette, we had the guy on from Rochester Hills, both Republicans. You know, Gretchen Whitmer, obviously, we talked about as a Democrat. Like, we've had all these people onto our show, and, like, the guy from Rochester Hills, that was the guy that started the drinking district law. The lady from Water Levette, that was the one that you guys worked with to get the increase in distribution. Like, that was the main signer. I think you have all of these things you can do, but now that COVID is gone, quote-unquote, that you're not going to get that expedited laws passed, those changes in laws from being able to deliver and hand deliver and distro. You know, I remember speciation would have, like, each day, like, there was a territory where they do delivery, and, like, that was just the day of the week you got delivery. Now, I don't know if you could do that anymore if the law kind of came back. I know the drinking districts stayed. The distribution laws stayed. But all those things that were COVID protections to help you guys kind of went away, and now you're kind of sitting here like, all right, how can we expand and compete?
Yeah, that's funny. It's, I mean, COVID, like, helped so many businesses, sort of. Hurt definitely way more. But, like you're talking about, yeah, just shifting kind of the ways that we do distribution and stuff like that. So, it's funny, the stuff that sticks around and then shifts the whole craft beer market, and now it's a time of no COVID, but, you know.
Yeah, quote unquote, air quotes, because we're not on video anymore.
Yeah.
All right, I have. We end the show with a fun final question, and as we're kind of tying up, because I promised the random lady who walked in on our show
it's a party.
That we were only going to go for 10 more minutes. So we're going to finish with a final question. This is kind of like a fun, especially after that whole government.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get Ken on a tangent.
Side effect. Oh, I get on plenty enough by myself.
That's
I don't
a big
need
one for
help.
This company, though. Yeah.
All right. I personally, Ken, am anti-flight. I want flights to go away.
Flight. Oh,
flights.
Yeah.
Beer flights. Yeah. Not airplane flights.
Trains. Yeah. Trains only.
Trains only. Yes. Yes. Let's call them beer trains.
Anti-flights. That's funny. Hey, tell that to our bartenders. They'll love you.
So social media, obviously, you want people to show flights. You want them to show all their beers. You, as the brewer, you know, that this gets to, everyone gets a chance to try every single beer. Me, as the person who's worked with thousands of different bartenders, wait staff and stuff, like, that is they hate flights.
Yeah.
Are you pro-flight or anti-flight?
I mean, I'm pro-flight, but yeah, I'm the guy, you know, trying to sell the beer. So, yeah, I want people trying as much as possible.
I find myself, and it's funny, my dad kind of was like, what the hell are you doing? The other day, tried this new brewery with him, and I'm going to get 2 sample pours every time. And then, you know, so I will have a pseudo-flight, but it'll be stretched out between. I'm never going to get a full 5 samples at a time. Yeah, I'll get 1 or 2, see what I like, you know, try 2 more.
It's like the Southwest
maybe I won't
flight.
Finish
it's a cheap
one
flight.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a spirit flight.
Spirit flight. Yeah, there you go.
But that's the cool thing about our new self-serve pours is you can do your own flights. So
yeah, but at that point you're doing your own flights. You're not
exactly
paying someone to pour you 6 4-ounce pours.
Sure. Sure.
I don't know. I just don't like it because the bartending side, like the pain in the ass that it becomes, and then the customer side of destroying your palate in between all these different
flavors. Like, yeah, what are you picking for that flight? You know, yeah. Are you picking all IPAs or are you picking across the board?
I feel like I'm like alone on my island on this anti-flight.
I'm kind of with that.
Like, if I were to get a flight board, there's one of those in that I have to, like, you know, choke down. Where I'm like, I don't want this, but it's in front of me.
That's why I do it, though.
And I'm finishing it.
I want to try the different varieties.
Kind of.
Especially if I'm only going to be there once. Like, who knows when I'm going to get back there. I want to try everything.
Yeah.
So I would like to ask out to the people that are listening. I would like the bartenders to give us their input. I understand that you don't like the flights because they are a lot more work. But would you prefer that we did it sample at a time through a space of time? Or just ask for a flight and you finished with it and we're done. So just let me know what you think.
There's a happy medium. It's called half pours.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Wendy, what's your final question? It is not the same thing.
It's the same thing.
It is not the same thing. Unless you're going to Dragon Meat and you're getting 6 ounce
potato
flight.
Potato. Yeah.
I almost think flights are more interesting now in distilleries. Like, I prefer that in distilleries than cocktail or some sort of mixed drink, but
I can't say much. I went to Moonshine Distillery in Canada and was able to try a bunch of different flavors of moonshine, and it was a weird like everything. Like, there was like a cream moonshine. I'm like, what is going on here? Wendy, what's your final question?
What is next for you guys?
Just get the location at Charlotte open, and start churning and burning out of there. I think that's been like the next step for the last couple of months, and we're getting really close now. Our beer garden is actually opening up next week on the weekends. We're gonna have a bunch of nonprofits come through so that we can get licensing to open up the beer garden before the actual tap room's ready.
And where is that?
On Charlotte Street.
So it's Charlotte and Cass?
Right behind Masonic Temple.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because we want to have that going for a Tiger season and all the concerts going on there. And, and then ideally by June we should have that tap room open. So, and then we'll start brewing out of there too.
Alright, well, that's going to do it. The Michigan Beer Series live here at Dingus Day at Eastern Market Brewing. My name is Ken. Wendy, thank you so much for joining us. For our guests, thank you so much for spending an hour with us.
Thanks, guys.
I appreciate it. We are going to stay here and party a little bit with some pierogi pizza.
Eat some pierogies,
And plenty of other amazing beers to try. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. I said Facebook twice. Twitter, Twitch, Kick, Rumble, Grindr, I don't care. Just search Better on Draft. You'll find us. And no matter what you think of your beer, we think it's Better on Draft. Have a good night.
Cheers.
Nice.